I'm Bobby Friction and I'm in southern India, in the city of Bangalore. And here, nearly 2 hours out of the bustling metropolis, in the heart of rural India, I've found a mini, metal, throbbing, pulsing electronic musical city.
Across India in the last few years, music festivals have been springing up. Zero in the Himalayas, Ragastan in the dunes of Jaisalmer, the Enchanted Valley Carnival, and the one known as the Glastonbury of India, NH7. This pioneering alternative festival started in 2010 in Pune and now has sites in 4 major Indian cities. I went to the festival in Bangalore to hear what has changed in Indian music and youth culture, and to meet the festival goers, a section of India's population who are becoming more and more confident in their tastes. This is Bangalore's New Beat.
I'm crazy about music.
But I'm seriously waiting for some reggae and dubstep music. I'm waiting for it.
Music is religion in India. It's like that. People dedicate their lives to it. They go for it completely.
I've just bumped into Vijay Nair, who basically owns and runs the festival. Vijay, take us back to the beginning, the genesis of this festival.
The actual beginning of this would be the first time I went to Glastonbury. That's the first time I'd seen a music festival. I didn't know that world existed. So I always wanted to put something together at that scale.
Now talk to me about the problems and all the stuff you had to come up against launching this festival.
When you do business in India, there's a whole bunch of problems you'll have with government, licensing. But the biggest problem I had the first year was to communicate to people what a festival is, because people, they hadn't seen a music festival here. The complaints I would get is, we're buying a ticket, but why are bands playing at the same time in different stages? I think I realized that it was not about building the festival, but the festival culture in India itself. But purely from an investment perspective, the first year we wanted investment, we couldn't get it. So I mortgaged my house at that point of time. And when I say my house, I mean my father's house. And that's how we raised the finances for it the first year.
Just let me get this right. You mortgaged your father's house. I'm just imagining the day or the night you asked him.
It wasn't so much asking. I just said, I just need some money temporarily and it will come back. And there's a huge risk, but it paid off after a couple of years.
Vijay, you're always very busy. What are you about to do?
We're running about 10 minutes late, so I'm going to rush to the gate right now and open the gates, actually. So it's beginning of festival this year and can't wait for it.
Is there some big ceremony, dancing ladies, fireworks, or are you just going to literally open a gate?
No, there's an entire ceremony. Then we'll sacrifice a goat, and as we do. And I think, yeah, based on the weather conditions after that. And if it rains, then we can open the gate. I think that's how we do things back here, yeah.
I'm assuming no goats are going to be killed during the opening of this festival.
No, it's good, you know, yeah.
Okay, we're in the production tent and the festival opened 3 minutes ago and the rain started 2 minutes ago. I'm with Shilaka Pai, who heads up the team of official NH7 photographers, and we're currently being attacked by what I think is a monsoon, or is this a hurricane even?
It's a late, uncalled for shower.
What does it feel like being at NH7?
Quite brilliant. You really see how everything's changed out here, and the sheer talent that's in this country that not many people know about. It's gone from, you know, predominantly Bollywood, and now more people are realizing that there's original music and that they can maybe pick up an instrument and play it. It's not like you have to stick to that constant profession of an engineer or a doctor or something. You know, you can pick up and play, which is not something that would happen before, maybe.
Across 2 days, musicians and DJs from the worlds of electronica, indie, heavy metal, dubstep, reggae, and more will travel from all over India to play at NH7. What's most amazing about it is that they're all playing their own music. This would have been impossible a few years ago. Music producer Mithi Adhikari grew up in Calcutta and came to the UK to work in live music production for the BBC at festivals such as Glastonbury and Reading. Now he's back living in India, producing some of the emerging bands.
I first noticed it about 5 years ago, I suppose, when I was sent an MP3 of a band called the Supersonics, who were from Calcutta. The first thing that struck me was that they were writing and performing their own songs. Now, you know, when I was a teenager or in university in India, I played in a band and you just did covers. You just played Rolling Stones, The Beatles, all of that. And if you played your own songs, people would sort of turn away and they were pretty sniffy about that.
So where did this new confidence to pick up a guitar or get on the decks come from? Since the 1960s, the influence of Western rock and pop music has slowly infiltrated the young people of India.
The new music I heard when I was there growing up was basically bootleg tapes. You know, hippies would travel to India with their cassettes. Then after they'd done their travels around India, would generally either sell off the cassettes or give them away. And somehow they would find their way back to us. Show me.
Cut to the 80s and 90s, and superstar acts like Sting, Simply Red and Deep Purple were brought over to play in India. But soon, the big arena acts began to sound like dinosaurs to the young. The Indian audiences wanted something else. Death metal! Now, when it comes to death metal and hardcore rock music, I think a lot of middle-class Indian kids who aren't really allowed to rebel that much in a family-centric culture grab on to the inherent rebellion and the "you don't understand me" kind of attitude that you get with death metal, and I think that's why it's so popular. The influence of Western bands on India's youth meant that inevitably a homegrown Indian rock band would emerge. Randolph Correa is the guitarist from one of India's biggest and most pioneering bands, Pentagram. I caught up with him backstage at NH7.
Yeah, man, we started with nothing. There was no festivals, okay? The only festivals that we had were Ganesha, and, you know, straight, the local festivals. And people had no concept of a music festival. But it was hard work. We had to just stick to our guns. We had to be wise. We had to be patient, but feisty at the same time and passionate, because that's your music. We knew back then even that we need a scene. We need more. This is not enough. People should experience this wonderful thing that is love, peace, freedom, and excitement and fun, man. And the people were always ready. I always said the people were ready.
India could have stayed a rock nation, but there was one thing that happened that changed the game.
Well, I have a theory, and I think what it was the explosion of broadband in India.
Music producer Mithi Adhikari.
Probably about 10 years ago, the Indian government decided that India was going to be wired up for broadband. I mean, I've driven 3 hours into a forest and come to a little village, and there you see internet cafe and you go, how did that happen? But now that the kids had broadband, they could just click on anything and listen to it, and it immediately exploded their world.
The apps and the sharing, you know, and the communication, I think brought a lot of people together. And the youth finally had a choice and a chance to listen to whatever music they wanted to because of the internet. They were no longer dependent on music stores. They're like, yes, this is new music. Let's download, let's find it, let's share it, let's just enjoy. So I think people's sensibilities in terms of music have just sort of rocketed beyond imagination.
Randolph Correa once again was at the vanguard with his new band Shaer and Funk, who combine rock guitar and bass and electronica and an Indian singer, Monica Dogra, who's also a Bollywood actress.
I think of our scene, if anyone knows, it's only Bollywood, and there was only heavy metal, and there was nothing in between. And Monica and I said, let's just get people moving a different way, because there's so many different ways people are dying to move in Bombay or the rest of India. People just want a new groove, a new vibe. It became this serious thing where people were like, dude, you know what? You've changed our lives. You've changed this. You've changed the scene. You blah, blah, blah. And I think none of that is complete without the people, the audiences, man. So they been amazing, man. It's a shocker. The women are so sexy now. But I mean, that's a good thing for rock and roll. And the guys know how to behave, right? And that was never there in India. So the guys are learning to be decent with the girls. The girls are wearing shorter pants and coming out festival style, you know? People are a little conservative out here. Oh, it's raining, how can we enjoy music? But now they're like going for it.
This is Bobby Friction in Bangalore, in India, at the NH7 Music Festival on the BBC World Service.
Hi, I'm Vandana.
How's this music scene actually affected young women, young Indian women?
As you can see, there are a whole lot of young girls here, and it's no longer about security, safety. You can come here alone, take your pictures, find the music you like, do whatever you like. And as you can see, I think there are a whole lot of people very, very happy, excited, looking sexy.
What do you think about leading female singers like Shahir?
I would still say that lead singers among women, leading big bands, are still not there. It's going to take a little time. Give it 5 years and we are going to rock the world.
NH7 costs around $50 to go to the whole weekender, so it's out of the reach of many ordinary Indians, but there is an increasingly powerful middle class who've saved up just to be there. So I've just got to really comment on your styles. You look like a dubstep stroke reggae head, okay?
Yep.
You, my love, look like an Indo-Pak Amy Winehouse.
Okay.
You look amazing. How do your parents feel about youth culture, this music, and even the ways you dress?
We don't dress like that in front of them. They don't interfere much because we stay far away, and they've given us our space, so it's fine as long as we don't do that in front of them. They don't want to see it.
Now is the time where a lot of parents in India are learning from the kids. How can you say no to kids? They're doing everything you want them to do. They're studying, they're scoring brilliantly. Why can't they dance and do whatever they want? Everybody knows Indians always looked after by their parents and sheltered, and it's all like that. And now everyone's independent. It's amazing.
The Lowriders are a reggae collective who rap in English. They see no contradiction in performing reggae in India.
God bless the love and greetings, King Jasmine, Ragaman of Lowriders, live and direct.
Now talk to me about reggae in India and Indian reggae. What's happening, man?
Movement started long ago. I mean, Goa beaches were cranking Bob Marley music in the 70s. So the elders say we missed the party. But then 7 years ago, there was a movement that started. Today we are at a position like this where we're rocking reggae parties on the major festivals.
Why does reggae work in India?
Connecting, it's connectivity, you know. It's music from the ghetto. So there's emotions involved when you make reggae music. And we are living in a serious times, you know. There's a lot of Babylon going on in India, I mean to say. A lot of population controlled by very few families. So, you know, there's outburst of these emotions. So they're finding that link. It has to be from the ghetto, from hardships of life, so it's proper representation. I think that's the reason why reggae is working right now, apart from the positive vibes, you know, which is needed. Boom, man.
It's quite an interesting contrast because for a while you forget that you're actually at a festival full of middle-class Indians who only represent a small section of the country. And just walking outside the front gate, there's guys here who obviously, well, they don't have anywhere to live and they're searching through bags for things to drink, and you suddenly get hit by what India's always been famous for, which is the massive, massive divide between the rich and the poor. And in a way, even though I love this and it's beautiful, it is a bubble.
Thank you very much. Hello.
That was Kailash Kher, one of the biggest singing stars in the whole country. Massive throughout the country in terms of Bollywood, in terms of mainstream stuff, but also credible. And the only man I know who ties together folk music rock music and the music of the true working class people of India.
That's madness. There was no time at all.
Our car was skidding and stuck in the mud, and somehow we ran, you know, in the mud, and somehow we made it. But we were half an hour late on stage. Yeah. When I saw the crowd, then everything vanished, and only singing and spirit of singing, that's all.
Honestly, Kailash, you know, you're on TV all the time. You'd get mobbed if you even walked down the streets. In a way, you're so mainstream. Why would you come to such an alternative music festival?
You know, this is my real food, actually, I would say. India needs these festivals very badly, because these people are the real energy, source of energy for me. Because the kind of music we perform sometimes, you know, I use very, very interior local dialects. But they understand the energy within and they connect with it.
Could you see these things happening with the rural, traditional and even religious parts of India?
Yeah, I see so much potential actually in India. India still is under development. Still, you know, so many people are hungry. But on the other side, so much of change is also happening, we are witnessing. So this diverse life, as well as this wonderful change and transition, is making a wonderful impact. You know, one side you see so much hot, one side you see so much rain.
You know, for me, you're the symbol of everything you've just said. You are at the middle of this spider's web of culture and music and class.
And Bobby, that's like really big words, and I'm humbled to say that. God bless you. Thank you so much. You only inspired me to write a word, Lavistan.
Stephen Budd runs music festivals around the world, including Africa Express. He was one of the original team that set up NH7 with Vijay Nair.
I had absolutely no idea of the spectrum of music that was available here and the quality of it.
The business story of the 21st century is about emerging markets. It's about India and China. What's that experience been like for you?
This particular business, the festival business, which we were very, very early in, there's a real opportunity to create something magnificent, but you've got to educate an audience, educate them to buy tickets, because there wasn't a real culture of buying tickets in advance. The idea is that in India, people just turn up and get in.
Is there serious money to be made in India in the music industry?
That's a very good question. The music industry is developing, but the digitalization of the music business means that the ground has completely shifted, and where are you actually making the money from the music business? And I think you're going to see more and more live music coming to the front in terms of it being the real sort of profit end of the business.
Now, with all the work you do in India, you get a good vision of Indian youth. Are they in a special place at the moment?
Very much so. And I think that, I'm sure it's a cliche and it's been said before, but, you know, right now India's having its 1960s moment in terms of opening up awarenesses of what's going on in the rest of the world, but also relationships between young India and the more traditional India, and how that's shifting. The tectonic plates of that seem to be shifting quite considerably.
Yo, yo, dump station! All the way from Birmingham, England! Make some noise for Bobby Friction!
I'm here with Dry the River, a British band who come out to India for the first time, straight into Bangalore, straight to the NH7 festival. How's India been for you?
Absolutely amazing. Yeah, we've been completely blown away. Yeah, it's been really fun. We've just come off stage now and the crowd, unbelievable. You never know what to expect when you come
especially for the first time, and people screaming out the names of songs and seeming like they knew the stuff. It was just incredible. It was overwhelming, really. It was really fun.
A lot of people smiling, which we don't get in the UK. I think people are very kind of sour-faced in the UK. Everyone's trying to be cool, you know, arms folded. But there was a lot of smiles, a lot of, you know, just people really singing along and getting into it. And
could you imagine collaborating with any of these musicians or downloading their stuff?
Definitely, yeah. We just met one of the guys from a band that we watched earlier.
Until We Last. Post-rock band who were amazing. We watched their set earlier and we got a CD off those guys and, you know, hopefully we'll stay in touch.
Yeah, definitely going to investigate that.
I'm here with Raghu Dixit, who essentially has conquered the world. You've left India, conquered the festivals in the West, in Europe, in America, and all these places, and now you're back tonight.
Yes.
Now, as every Indian alternative musician tries to quite literally export their music, you're the lone voice who's done it. How did you do it?
I think the only answer is to spend a lot of money on your own and be bold about it. And I think we, as a band, took a decision 4 years back that whatever we earn in India, we'll put it out there and see how it goes. For 3 years, we did that. And eventually, we went on to become Songline's Best Newcomer Award winner in the UK. For us to get that, I think things really turned for us.
So what are we going to see tonight?
Tonight, you're going to see the launch of the second album. The name of the album is Jag Changa, which means the world is beautiful. And within a day of its release, it went on to become number one on the iTunes charts in India, beating Bollywood. For me, that is a personal victory for the Indian independent music scene.
Youth culture's changed so much in India, and music culture, the alternative scene's changed so much. What is your vision of the future?
I can only hope for the best. And when I started off, if I could play Hotel California note to note, I would be considered a good musician. But today, if I go up and sing in my mother tongue and talk about things that I really went through and therefore relatable for others in the audience, I think that's what is making Indian music very, very proud to be where it is right now. They're very proud to wear India on their sleeve.
At the dawn of a new political era for India, there's no doubt the future belongs to India's new generation, who just might be having their own 1960s moment.
It's not just music, really. It's film, it's theatre, it's social activism. You know, the old guard of the establishment are losing their hold on things. You know, all the money and the exciting ideas is being generated by the 20 to 30-somethings. I mean, obviously, I'm talking about urban areas. There is a vast, vast swathe of India that's probably still 50 years behind. But they all have mobile phones and watch television. So it's only a matter of time before they get in.
The beep.